Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. As more people identify as non-binary, today individuals will often introduce themselves by the pronouns they identify with. Emails are signed with he, him, his, she, her, hers, or they, them, theirs. For linguists, this is an interesting situation as pronouns are now playing a prominent role in gender politics. This may seem new, but as history tells us, the only history that's new is the history you don't know. The usage of pronouns have been a part of our history and gender politics for over 150 years in the battles over suffrage and gender equality. And today it's the usage of the word thought to be plural, they, to denote a gender-neutral person. That's not new either. The search for the missing gender-neutral singular pronoun goes back to the 19th century. Even words thought to be neo-pronouns that are in use today by small numbers of people, z, here, and here's, goes back to, in some form, to the 1800s. In his book on this search for the alternative to they, Dennis Barron lists over 50 pages of alternatives proposed by linguists, amateurs, and cranks, most of which never went anywhere. Barron is the author of What's Your Pronoun? Beyond He and She. He's a professor emeritus of English and linguistics at the University of Illinois, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Dennis Barron, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, great to be here, Rich.
Gender identity has put a new emphasis on the words we use to describe ourselves and others, and pronouns have now taken on a new prominence, as your book suggests, more than just a way to describe a person or persons, but also, you're describing their identity, he, him, his, she, her, hers, or they, them, theirs. And we think of this as a 21st century language issue, but this issue goes of what pronouns to use goes way back, doesn't it?
It does, actually. We have a new way of looking at it right now, but interest in and concern about gender-neutral pronouns, inclusive pronouns, we've got commentary going back to the late 18th century, and we've got actually usage of singular they, technically a plural pronoun, but used for singular references as well, going back to the 14th century. So this is a pretty old-fashioned way of looking at pronouns that's suddenly new again.
Now, when did pronouns become a part of our language? When we've quit referring to John Tucker over there and we start referring to him as some version, probably, of he, him, or his.
Right.
When did that actually come into existence? Has that always been a part of English?
As far as we know, yeah. By the time English was a language that you could actually put a name on, call it English, we had probably a full set of nouns and verbs and pronouns and adjectives and articles and all sorts of stuff, as well as interjections and plenty of words that you weren't allowed to say in polite company.
But Old English had words that were masculine, feminine, and neutral, correct?
Right. And in both nouns and in pronouns. And now our nouns don't have what we call grammatical gender anymore. It lost that. The nouns lost that during the late Old English, early Middle English period for a variety of reasons. Other languages kept these distinctions in their noun system. So in French, a table is feminine, but it's got nothing to do with the biology of a table. In French, it's just a way of classifying words. It's got nothing to do with actual physical attributes. And in the pronoun system, we have masculine and feminine and neuter pronouns going way back into Old English. The difference between then and now was all of those pronouns began with, and we're talking about the spoken language, began with what we would call an H sound today. So the masculine pronoun was hey, and the feminine was hail, and the neuter was hit. And these become, in modern English, he and it. And the feminine pronoun she comes in later Old English and early Middle English as a way of breaking that ambiguity that's created when all of your pronouns sort of sound the same. By late Old English, you couldn't tell whether you were using a masculine, feminine, or neuter pronoun very easily. You'd have to figure it out from context. And so we started tinkering with it. And that's where they comes in late Old English, early Modern English. They is a word that English borrowed from Norse, from the actual people who were invading England at the time. Their third person plural pronoun began with a th, a th sound, and because the English pronouns were so confusing at the time, it's likely that the Old English people borrowed this new th pronoun and got they, them, there as a way of distinguishing singular and plural.
Right. And but as you mentioned earlier, the big issue is this third person singular. We used to use they as a third person singular. At some point, that became third person plural. And at some point, it became ungrammatical, if you will, to use it for a third person singular.
Right. It was always initially a plural.
Mm-hmm.
The they was always plural. But it began to be used as singular with indefinites like everybody or somebody, which are technically singular in number, but they imply more than one person. They imply that you're talking about a bunch of people, a class of people, a group of people. So we'd say everybody forgets their passwords, or the student should remember to bring their book, because you're talking not about just one particular student, but the class of people who are actually students. So it was an easy transition to use that plural pronoun for a singular noun that implied plurality. And then we began using it just idiomatically, because it was just natural.
Mm-hmm. But our old friends, Strunk and White, the old friends of Basic Comp, basically hammered they out of the usage of third-person singular. And, of course, that's why it's so interesting as we with gender identity today, looking for a third person singular. There's this, you know, if you've gone through English comp and you know, Strunk and White says don't use they, it's hard to use they again for a single person.
It can be hard, but if you look at people who strongly object to singular they, I never use it. I wouldn't be caught dead using it. If you listen to them long enough or read what they write long enough, you'll see them using it too. So maybe when you're paying close attention and trying to be, you know, dot all the I's and cross all the T's, you will avoid singular they. But the enemies of singular they use it just as the friends do. So it's you know, you can't get away from it. It's inescapable.
Well, one of the things that has come from, I guess, that idea of not using they as a third-person singular is to come up with another word that works better. And, of course, the one that you hear today, and it's often thought of new words, is Z, hear, and hears.
Yeah.
And that's a Z-E-H-I-R and H-I-R-S.
Mm-hmm.
And these are actually old words.
they go back, some of them go back to the 19th century. The first invented or coined pronoun that I was able to locate was created in 1841 by Francis Brewster, who was had just gotten his medical degree from Yale and apparently had time on his hands. Practicing medicine just didn't do it for him, so he wrote an English grammar book and self-published it. I believe there's only one copy left in the world. But in that grammar book, he had this gender-neutral pronoun E, just the capital E, M, E-M, and E-S, for, he called it masculo-feminine, which was his way of saying gender neutral. It referred to both men and women, either men or women. And nobody picked up on this, but that there it was in the record. And E has been reinvented a number of times since then by other people who were unaware of Brewster's work. In 1884, a well-known American hymn writer named C.C. Converse created Thon, T-H-O-N, a blend of that and one, to serve the same purpose. He got a lot of attention for it, and even a few people were using it in published writing. And Thon made it into a couple of dictionaries, but still, today, almost no one has ever heard of it.
My guest today is Dennis Barron. He's a professor emeritus of English and linguistics at the University of Illinois and the author of What's Your Pronoun? Beyond He and She. It's published by Liveright. And it looks at the history of the use of pronouns and this idea of finding a way to identify third person singular, which has a long history in linguistics as we, in the 21st century, have gone from he and she to them and they as a identifier for gender in gender-neutral ways. And your book goes through a lot of different linguists who have tried to come up with this version of describing a gender-neutral way. And it's very interesting. You actually sort of talk about this political history of pronouns. In the early 20th century, in the late 19th century, it was the use of he as a generic that was very much talked about and debated as women gained suffrage and the ability to hold office. All the laws governing voting and who can hold an office used the generic he pronoun. I guess he is a generic for human being. This was very controversial, and this this was debated for a couple of decades in the early 20s.
So in terms of the legal history of the generic he, in 1850, England passed a law which said, among other things, that when a word that refers to masculine nouns like he or man or something like that occurs in a statute, it also includes women. So it was a way of simplifying the law. You didn't have to say he or she every time you had a pronoun in the law. It was simply a statute that said from now on, every time he occurs in a law, it also means she. And in 1871, the U.S. passed a law which essentially said the same thing. So what happened then in the 1870s was that American suffragists said, well, look, if he is generic in the law, and everybody agrees that in the criminal law, if you commit a crime and the perpetrator is referred to as he in the law, and if a woman commits that crime, she can also be punished because he includes she in the law. Everybody agrees with that, right? A woman can go to jail for committing a crime, can be executed for murder, can be required to pay her taxes, those sorts of things, even if the law refers to the person doing that as he. So let's be consistent. If he occurs in the voting law, referring to voters as he, that means women can vote. This was what the suffragists argued in 1872. This was a very popular argument among the suffragists, the legislators, and the judges, all of whom were men, and most of whom didn't want women to vote, said, no, yeah, in the criminal law, he means she. When there's a penalty to be applied, he is always generic. But when there is a privilege or a right to be granted, then it has to be granted individually, separately, each time if it's to include women. So, you know, he is generic for punishments. He is men only for voting or for entering traditionally male professions like the law or for holding office. There was a debate in the 1840s in the U.S. Over whether a woman could be president, because in Article 2 of the Constitution, which describes the duties and responsibilities of the president is referred to as he.
Right, and it was used at, when actual office holders were elected, female office holders were elected. Would they be able to take their seat? I mean, these were debates that went on in our country, yeah.
Yeah, in 1916, when Jeanette Rankin became the first woman elected to the U.S. House of Representatives from Montana, one newspaper ran a headline saying, well, she can't be, because the Constitution calls legislators he, and she's not a he. But she had no trouble getting seated. She won handily, and she served in Congress.
Yeah. One of the things your book does is describes in detail all these efforts to create a word that is gender neutral, that works as the subject, the predicate, or the possessive. And there's a lot of different words that have come up over time, going back to, you mentioned 1840s, but 1860s, 1880s, 1890s, and so on, of a lot of different words trying to come up with this. Let's talk about a couple of them. One anonymous writer, a gentleman, came up with heesh, hisser, mm-hmm. and himmer.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, it was very common to blend the masculine and feminine pronouns. So you have heesh, hisser, himmer, here, hisser, himmer. People were inventing these over and over and over again, usually unaware that somebody else had already done this. I found over 200 of these coined words going back between 1841 and yesterday, but many of them, most of them, from the later 19th and early 20th century. It was a very active form of word creation at the time. And even though these words weren't successful, in that even today only a fairly small proportion of speakers of English use them, enough people use them, and enough people keep inventing them, keep coining them, to suggest that we feel there's a missing word. We feel there's a need there that needs to be filled. We just haven't found one right way to do it yet.
What were some of the most interesting ways to come up with this gender-neutral pronoun? What were some of the more interesting ones that you ran across?
Well, the one that I nominate for cutest coinage is IP. IP, which was coined in 1884. It just seems so adorable. There's Hirsch, there's Tha, there's Ear, there's Z, Ons, his or himmer, Who, Han, Si, and most of these were coined quite seriously. Occasionally somebody coined one as a joke, but these people were generally quite serious about filling the gap. Somebody might say, oh, you know, I know Converse coined Thon, but I don't like Thon. I prefer Za. I think Za would be a much better word. Or I prefer Le, because it's a word in French, so let's just borrow it into English, regardless of the fact that it's masculine in French. We can make it gender neutral in English. People borrowed words from other languages. Some people wanted to revive words that were in dialect use in England, like ooh. In 1792, somebody suggested, well, you know, in the West Country, they say ooh for whether they're talking about men or women or animals or things. Why don't we use that?
But none of them ever really caught on. Did any...
Exactly.
What about Thon? What about Thon? Because you hear right in the book that, you know, people refer to Thon as a reason for coming up with another word. Was Thon ever used?
It was used by a small number of diehards. There were, in 1895, there was a popular college psychology textbook that was published that used Thon. And in the introduction, the author said, well, here's this word I'm going to use, and it's gender neutral, and it avoids the problem of having to say he or she. It's inclusive. We want to include men and women in this. It's very binary in the early discussions. They're just talking about men and women. The difference today is we're also including people who are non-binary or gender non-conforming in this use of a singular pronoun that's different from the traditional conventional he-she binary.
Now, most of the time it is they, them, and theirs.
Yeah.
But is there any effort, from what you see, that Z here and hears is making a comeback? As you've mentioned, these are older words, but you're starting to see it again today.
Exactly. Yes, they are making a comeback. They're still, from what we can tell from surveys, the most popular pronouns among non-binary people are the he and she that reflect the gender of the person. They're singular they that reflect that sort of, you know, emphasis on the non-binary. And about 5% of self-identified non-binary people use a coined pronoun. So it's a fairly small chunk of folks who are using these coined pronouns, but it's not insignificant. You know, that turns out to be thousands of people. You know, you're talking about a country with 300 plus million people in it. 5% is going to be a big enough number that you'll notice it, that you'll see it. People put it on their email signatures. They put it on conference badges. They put it on their "Hello, my name is" stickers when they go to meetings, and they tell each other their pronouns. This question, "What's your pronoun?" is becoming more and more common.
My guest today is Dennis Barron, the author of "What's Your Pronoun? Beyond He and She." It's published by LiveRight, and he's a professor emeritus of English and linguistics at the University of Illinois. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, what about other languages other than English? Are other language and linguists dealing with this issue in their countries? Now, some languages don't have this issue because they do have gender-neutral pronouns from the get-go.
Right. So Finnish, Chinese don't have gender in their pronoun system, so it's not an issue. It doesn't make their societies any more or less sexist or any more or less inclusive. But it's just a phenomenon of how their language is developed. Swedish has been interestingly successful in getting people to use a new gender-neutral coinage, hen, that was originally coined in the 1960s and started to become popular in the 1990s and was added to the Swedish National Dictionary in 2015, so about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, it got sort of an official seal of approval. And you can see it in Swedish publications. You will see it occasionally on Swedish TV. If you watch any Scandi Noir on your PBS station, you will sometimes hear somebody either using it, and the subtitles may not make this clear. And occasionally they riff on it. They say, they make a joke about it, or they tease somebody about using it or not using it.
Now, early in the book, you use a sentence to fill in the blank, and this sort of gives you 8 options. Everyone forgets blank passwords.
Mm-hmm.
And you try, everyone forgets his or her passwords, her passwords, as using a feminine for universal.
Yeah.
Everyone forgets everyone's passwords. And you say, you know, they or theirs works great.
It does. It's the most natural solution for English. When you have the generic masculine, all too often it means only men and excludes women, even though it pretends to be inclusive. It excludes people who are non-binary. Everyone forgets her password. Gets used sometimes, but it is perceived by many people to be a little bit too political. Everyone forgets his or her password. The one solution that was considered grammatically acceptable in the 19th century, everybody hated, because his or her was considered too long, too cumbersome, too repetitive. If you have to say the pronoun more than once, you have to have every other sentence as his or her, him or her, he or she in it, and everybody hates that. We can't say it for people. Everyone forgets its password because it is used to dehumanize and insult people.
Yes.
When it's applied to people, and so that's a non-starter. Everyone forgets one's passport. You can't
right.
say because it sounds unforgivably British. And they don't even say that in England. Let's
Which was the one I wrote down. It's like, you know, one's passport. Yes, of course. But
right.
but they
everyone
is...
forgets one's passport. Doesn't one? Yes. Well, that sounds a little too snooty for Americans anyway. And then there's the coined word. Everyone forgets here password. And you know that it's useful, but the problem with the coined words is that too many people see them as strange or unpronounceable or too attention-grabbing, and they have to be explained to them. And so that's an uphill battle for a coined word if it doesn't fit the context naturally.
And you're right, that the missing word is they.
Yeah, the missing word is they, because it's been there all along. We fall into it by accident when we're not paying attention. It's idiomatic, it's automatic, it's just there. And, I mean, my prediction for certainly the short-term future is that we're going to continue to have a variety of solutions to the fill-in-the-blank question. Some people will continue to use a generic masculine, even though the number is very, very small. Many people will use a singular they. Occasionally you'll get a his or her, and occasionally you'll get a coined word. But all of those are solutions are going to coexist for the immediate future.
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating look at this history, the politics involved with pronouns that go back 150 or more years. The name of the book is What's Your Pronoun? Dennis, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich.
Dennis Barron is a professor emeritus of English and linguistics at the University of Illinois and the author of What's Your Pronoun? Beyond He and She. It's published by Live Right. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.